Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Red Cell Review Radio right here on freeworld.fm. What's up, everybody? I have some really cool guests with me today. I do another show called Almost Human Live, and Tony Dio from that show is here, and Mr. Manny. Hello, Manny.
Hello, how you doing?
I didn't want to mispronounce your last name. Manny Mejias.
Mejias, yes. Very nice. We're going to make you an honorary Latino yet.
You think I would like remember that because I've known you forever.
Yeah.
What's up, Tony?
Yeah, man. Thanks for having us, man.
Yeah, good to meet you.
I figured since our other host that we do Almost Human Live, that's not going to happen for a while. I figured this would be kind of cool because we got a thing going, you know. And yeah, I hate to break it up and everything. And it's sad what Ralph has going on with his family and stuff like that. So all the best of wishes to him and everything. But I want to do a show with you guys, and we're going to talk about Iron Maiden today. This is going to be the Iron Maiden like family tree. We're going to go through, where Iron Maiden kind of started and where some of the members came, left and what they did afterwards and everything. So this is going to be pretty cool. The first song that we just played was Iron Maiden from the Soundhouse tapes. I figured let's just start at the very beginning, you know, and I like the Soundhouse tapes. You guys like the Soundhouse tapes? Some of the songs are different from the studio album, the first.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's cool. I like that raw sound of the first Iron Maiden album anyhow. So the Soundhouse tapes, you know, definitely has that raw, you know, struggling band sound about it, you know. It's pretty cool. I mean, it was three songs on that. It was Iron Maiden, Invasion, and Prowler.
Yeah.
And they recorded a couple more that they released, you know, on some collections later on. But that was all that came out on that original 7-inch EP.
Yeah, I think the one I have, because it was a re-release when they re-released all the Maiden albums. If you collected all of them, you got that Soundhouse tapes, and they added some extras on there.
This one.
Yeah, that one.
You know, this is one of the most valuable CDs that I own.
Really?
Because these are super rare.
Wow.
You look it up on Discogs. Yeah, it's pretty rare. It's almost more expensive than an actual Soundhouse vinyl.
That's crazy. Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I like it, but what amazes me is I like Judas Priest or Deep Purple. Iron Maiden had their sound set from day one. It was a little raw, but the sound that they would explore for the majority of their career is already in existence. That's what amazes me about that band. And I believe what songs are on there on the Soundhouse one?
You've got a song called Invasion, and Prowler from the first album, and Iron Maiden from the first album. So Invasion wasn't used on the first album. That was used as a B-side, I think, on the first single from I think maybe it was Wrathchild or Prowler. I can't remember. I have the vinyl. I can't remember what's on what. But yeah.
Well, it's amazing because cool. The two of those songs are still populating the set list this very day. So it's that's pretty amazing.
Well, yeah.
The drums are a little bit different because it's not Clive on those songs. But
who's the drummer on there? Who's
the drummer? The drummer on here is, if I can read his name, Doug Sampson.
Doug Sampson.
So it's Doug Sampson, Dave Murray, Paul Di'Anno, and Steve Harris. So they don't even have a second guitarist at this point. Dennis Stratton wasn't even playing in the band.
Was he officially not in the band yet when that was recorded?
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I really, I've never owned it. I never heard it till the YouTube actually existed. I've never owned it. I've never even seen a bootleg out in the wild. And I remember when those reissues came out, I didn't rebuy them because I wanted that, but I didn't rebuy them because I already had a majority of that stuff on CD, except Live After Death. I didn't have that one at that time yet on CD when those reissues came out.
Yeah, I didn't buy them either. My favorite Maiden CD collection is the two CD Castle versions that came out in the early 90s, around mid 90s.
Mine too.
But I eventually worked at Sanctuary Records, but before I even worked, I had friends there, and someone got me one of those Soundhouse tapes when they did the issues. So
one fell off the truck, huh?
Yeah, one fell off the truck.
One fell off the truck. Oh,
it's very cool. But see, I don't consider Iron Maiden really started until the first debut album, you know, because that's where the real Maiden is. You got Paul Di'Anno and then Dave Murray, and then Dennis Stratton finally comes in on guitar, and Steve Harris and Clive mm-hmm. Burr on the drums. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, that's Iron Maiden, you know, even though the Soundhouse tapes is cool. That first,
I kind of agree with that. It's like AC/DC, they recorded a song with Dave Evans. You may consider AC/DC, not you, other people, but I don't. AC/DC was born the minute Bon Scott stepped in there. I kind of agree with your assessment on
your first album pretty much solidifies the start.
And Paul Di'Anno, he was good on that Soundhouse tapes, but he even got even better, I think, on that first mm-hmm. debut album. And his voice is made for these first two albums for Iron Man and Killers, you know. Bruce Dickinson sings these songs, but they're just not the same. You know, only Paul can sing these songs. And they just have the fire, I guess, and you know, the passion to play this music. And it's not metal, it's punk, but it's like a crossover, like a metal punk type thing.
Don't say that because he hates punk.
would you consider them like a crossover band in a way?
You know, it's kind of hard to say because, they were still doing, hard rock and what was called heavy metal. People were calling Led Zeppelin and stuff like that heavy metal. But, of course, you got Sabbath. But it does have a little bit of a punk element to it, for sure, because it's speeded up. It's mm-hmm. more fast paced, yep. you know, than other metal at the time. You know, of course, Judas Priest kind of did that along the lines too, around what, 79, when they came out with Exciter,
right?
You know, they're kind of playing the speedy tempos. I could see the little punk element. I could see what you're saying.
I definitely see that too. I agree. And it's so interesting because, like, growing up, Led Zeppelin, Aerosmith, Alice Cooper, Kiss, Deeper, a lot of bands that we would not consider heavy metal. I still consider them that way because that's the way I grew up. But Iron Maiden were probably one of the first bands to remove that blues influence out of their music.
That's true.
Yeah. And I know that Steve Harris is very influenced by, he loved Black Sabbath and he loved Queen, but he's very influenced by Jethro Tull. The Genesis era that he grew up with, which would have been Peter Gabriel, yes. And I think it's a combination of prog rock meets metal meets a punk attitude, but maybe that attitude maybe comes from Paul Di'Anno. I don't know, you know.
Yeah, he had the punk look. He had the punk image when he came in. He had the shorter, spiky hair, and he had the leather jacket. And kind of, he would have fit right into hanging out with Sid Vicious or something, you know.
Oh yeah, definitely. What's some of your guys' favorite songs? I mean, I love this whole entire album. I think it's probably maybe my second. It's up there. It's one of my top favorite Maiden albums. There's not a bad song on here. What about you guys?
You talking about the debut?
Yeah, debut.
Yeah, I mean, I love everything about the debut and Killers. I love both albums. It's a great one, man. It's just so much good stuff on that album, for sure. It's hard to just pick one.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I even like Charlotte the Harlot, and that's a ridiculous song. But I think what sells me is
Prowler's probably my favorite.
Yeah, that's.
You know what? I'm going to have to go with Prowler. I'm going to go with Prowler.
Yeah, it's a great opening track. But after this album, Dennis Stratton unfortunately leaves the band. Was he fired or did he just leave? Do you guys know?
He was fired.
Yeah, he supposedly told Steve Harris that he was a big fan of the Eagles, and Steve Harris
Is that true?
That's what I heard. Yeah. That was one of the rumors.
I think that's one of the rumors, but I think the point is that Dennis Stratton was more of a 70s throwback, where Adrian Smith, he had some of those elements, but he was definitely a modern guitar player, modern heavy metal guitar player. I think that, I mean, the difference night and day between the first album and second album, not just production wise, but the songwriting is just incredible. There's a couple songs I think that don't sound completed, but overall incredible. And also we should point out it was produced by Martin Burt's album number two, I believe. It so it's a really incredible album.
Well, let's go listen to Adrian Smith's, one of his previous bands. He was in this band Urchin, and he actually sang the song. It's called She's a Roller. Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever heard this song?
Yeah, I've got the CD of that as well. I was just sitting here looking at it, actually.
Hey, I didn't know they actually released a CD of that. I just thought it was a single, Tony.
It's unofficial release, but they've actually got an official release that came out on High Roller Records a couple years ago to complies all their stuff.
Mm. Now,
Adrian, I like it, but
go ahead. Yeah,
I was just gonna say, I like the song. I've only heard one song, Tony. I'm a Roller, which he's about to spin, but
she's a roller.
No, thank you. But it's a to me, it's definitely a 70s type hard rock track to me. No,
yeah
the whole record's like that. It's just very, it's got more in common with Bad Company or something like that, really, for what they were doing.
Yeah. But I can definitely hear Adrian's style, his guitar style in this song.
Mm-hmm.
Now we get to Killers, the second Iron Maiden album. Adrian,
I wanted to mention before you got there, Wayne, sorry to interrupt you. Adrian, we're talking about Adrian and what, he, unless you want to go where he went on and when he left Maiden, what he did.
Yeah, we could do that too. All these guys did so many things. It's hard to
did
like
a lot of stuff.
Everything. Yeah.
If we were kind of focusing on Adrian, I was going to say, after he left Maiden, he had a band called Adrian Smith and Project.
Right.
And that was a very commercial sounding album. And it came out on, I think it was on EMI in Europe.
It was on EMI,
Enigma over here in the States. And then he had a band called in the early 90s, he had a band called Psycho Motel.
Oh, yes. I remember that.
Two albums. And it had different singers on each one, but the debut album, State of Mind, very Led Zeppelin-like, has a big Zeppelin influence to it, especially with the vocalist. But both pretty good records overall.
Was he in anything else?
I never heard of that Psycho Motel till years later, actually about 2 years ago. I never actually listened to it. I didn't even know they existed,
Well, you asked, was he in anything else? And in more recent years, he's hooked up with Richie Kotze.
I meant before he joined Maiden.
I have no clue if he was anywhere before he was in Maiden. Yeah. Urchin's all I know.
So he's on the Killers album, and that album is just, if the debut album is that good, Killers is like a step up,
For sure.
Many good songs on there. They still have that punk and metal style going on, but they just stepped it up, and it's awesome. It's great. But unfortunately, Paul Di'Anno is fired from the band, what do you think? What do you guys think of Killers in general?
Tony, I'll let you go first.
Killers, for the longest time was my favorite Iron Maiden album. Number to Beast has kind of surpassed it over the years. And it could actually be on a teeter totter. It could go between either one of which is my favorite, but I love it. I love everything about it. I think it's a great record, not a bad track on it. One of my favorite songs on it is Prodigal Son, which is the most proggy song that's on it.
Yeah.
As many projects as Paul Di'Anno's done over the years, I would love to hear him do maybe like an unplugged project and do that song again. That would be very, very cool. And Paul's not been doing well in recent years. He's been had knee surgery, and he's been in a wheelchair. He's performing in a wheelchair, but I saw some videos of him recently, and he sounds really good. His voice is very strong. He's sitting down in a wheelchair singing. But
yeah, I'm surprised he can sing that good sitting
because
down.
Because, well, a couple of years, you know, in the last 10 years, I've seen him in concert, and he didn't sound that good. Hmm. But recently, he sounds really good.
Yeah.
He doesn't have his power from when he was in his 20s, of course, but he just sounds very good for his age and to be in his condition.
Yeah. What about you, Manny?
I think it's an excellent album. I'm with Tony. For years is my favorite Iron Maiden album. And I teeter between that and Peace of Mind, not Number of the Beast. Peace of Mind is the first one I heard. I love that album. And I would have been curious to see, and this is controversial from my side, I don't think if they held on to Paul Di'Anno, they would have made it as huge in the United States. That's my opinion. I don't think Paul Di'Anno had the kind of voice that would have appealed to people outside of the metal, you know, metal side at that point in time. Nowadays, he's great, but... I don't think he had the charisma, stagecraft that Bruce Dickinson has. That being said, I don't think Dickinson had the grit or the there's just something about Paul Di'Anno's voice when he sings "Murders in the Rue Morgue" or and he can sing softer material too equally well. He's such an underrated vocalist. And there's a reason Steve Harris picked him, because the guy could sing. But overall, I love the album, and I think it's not only one of the best Iron Maiden albums, but also one of the best heavy metal albums of the 80s, and very influential. Also crossed over probably to the punk side of things, not musically, but a lot of fans that hated heavy metal liked Iron Maiden, you know, so...
I know a lot of people I know that listen to punk music, they love these first two Maiden albums. And it's funny you mentioned Prodigal Son, because that, like, it's like you mentioned, Tony, it's a progressive song, and that would just kind of show the direction they kind of took later on in their career. So for them to, you know, do that early on, you know, just to see where they went from there, it's really cool. But like I mentioned earlier, Paul Di'Anno got fired from the band, starts up another band. He tries to call it Lone Wolf, and then another band was already called Lone Wolf, and they had to change the name, and he just figured, let's just use Di'Anno. They only recorded a few songs, I think, right? And then they ended up disbanding.
One album.
They did one full-length album, and it's totally commercial hard rock. It doesn't sound anything like Iron Maiden or anything that Di'Anno would do in his later projects. Yeah. It's very AOR, commercial hard rock, melodic rock. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, do you have that, Tony? You have everything. Do you have that album?
I have it.
I do have it. I have it on LP and unofficial CD.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I have an unofficial CD of it too, and LP. I bought it in 1984 or 5 because I was such a huge Iron Maiden fan, and I was so disappointed in it. And I even bought and you can get this commercially on if you want a physical copy. I guess there was a show called Live in London or something. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. It's out on DVD. Yeah.
Yeah. And I bought the DVD. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of funny because he's decked out in Iron Maiden type gear, but he's singing songs like Heart User. And
weren't they covering like Journey songs and stuff like that too at some point?
No, but they definitely were going in that direction. You're not far off.
I never heard it. I never gave it a listen. It was one of the things I just never heard.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, like it's very much like a Journey meets like a Foreigner type band. Yeah, he was up there in leather, and there it's a live concert. You can find it. I'm sure it's on YouTube as well, Live at London.
Yeah.
That's the problem, I think, with him. Like you said, he's doing his AOR thing. Why would you do that for coming from Iron Maiden? Like, who would want to hear you do that? You know,
well, you don't ever know. I mean, he had a really, really good voice.
He did. But I think he picked the wrong types of music after he left Maiden to do
it. I'm sure he was having people influence him, saying, "Hey, you know, if you sing this, you'll have chart success or whatever." And he was looking for that.
Well, you know, they didn't get signed in the States because my album is an import. It's not and it was on an indie label too.
It was on, I think it was on a label called FM Records.
Yes, FM Records. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't believe I remember that. I mean, but Yeah, Wayne, it's not horrible, but it's not very memorable. Imagine if Survivor had put out an album of their cast-offs, and that's what it sounds like,
Good way of putting it.
It's just not. What saves that album from complete mediocrity, I'll be honest with you, is Paul Di'Anno's performance is what saves it from lyrically. And he artistically, he didn't write anything on it, I don't believe. And Tony, if you have the original album, take a look at the back. It'll tell you it was endorsed by Levi Jeans, company.
Yeah, bring the album in here with me. Yeah, it's not on the CD, but yeah. But yeah, you used to see that a lot on different albums. They would have clothing lines and door bands. I've seen like Puma was an endorser on like, I don't know, some bands or something I've seen
Really?
before.
That's funny.
Yeah, I think it might have been the band we're going to talk about here in a little bit, Praying Mantis. I think it may have been. I saw it on.
It's interesting. All right. Well, that band broke up, Di'Anno. And then in 1985, what's his name? Jonathan King tried to start a super group called Gog Magog. And he got Paul Di'Anno, Clive Bird, Yanek Gers, Pete Willis, and Neil Murray. And but the only problem was they couldn't record any original material. They had to do cover songs. And that whole thing just blew up and never materialized, never really did anything. I think they recorded a couple songs, but what do you have in your hand there? You got something?
Yeah, I have
What
an
is
unofficial
that?
the unofficial CD of Gog and Magog.
I didn't know.
Yeah, it's an
That's
EP.
amazing.
It's an EP and it was only three songs, and with the lineup you just named. It's really funny, man, because when I saw Paul Di'Anno back in, I think it was 2010 maybe or nine, that he toured the States. He had Icarus Witch as his backing band and he was doing a tour. I don't know if you guys saw that. I'm sure it came down your way. But he did a meet and greet afterwards. It was before all the paid meet and greet situations. He sat, and I mean there was a line of people at the club waiting to meet him. And I brought some albums and stuff to get signed, and a friend of mine mailed me some stuff to get signed for him, and he had the Gog Magog album in his stack. And when Paul got to it, he goes, "Oh God, you've got this bloody thing. God, this is awful." But he signed it and
He
he just
signed it
kept
anyway.
going, And then we had the Di'Anno solo record too, and he goes, "Oh, this is bad."
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy Woo! And sadness oh. and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose.
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
That's funny. He said that.
Well, at least he's got a good sense of humor, and he actually said
But the Gog and Magog stuff is very poppy, very commercial sounding. And I'm sure it was something somebody threw some money at them and said, "Here, go record this." And they were probably paid a flat fee and they did it for the cash.
Wow, it's too funny. And then seeing Yanek Gers in there, I mean, that's there, he's with some Iron Maiden people there, so that's he gets to be in the band at some point. And then
Pete Willis from Def Leppard
from Def Leppard, yeah, that's cool. He just disappeared off the face of this earth. Then after that, Paul started another band called Battle Zones, which stuck around for quite a while. And they released actually quite a few albums, right?
They did three albums. I have a set that has all three in a little box.
Okay, all right. I heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got the original on vinyl, two of them. I actually like them quite a bit. I like the first one. It's really raw.
Yeah, fighting back.
Yeah, the main song. There's only one songwriter. It's what is his name? John Regan or something like that. And the album is it's basically chunka chunka riffs, but his voice is great. There's a song called "The Land," the land God gave to Cain, and it's a really solid album, and I have him on CD, and I have him on vinyl. And my story, the only time I tried to go see Paul Di'Anno was not this album, was the one after that, Children of Madness. Is that what it's called, Wayne?
I don't want to know was the single. They used to shut down on Headbangers Ball quite a bit.
Yeah, I used to see it over here. So he was playing at a Club 19. Actually, Mr. T's Club 19, it was called. It wasn't owned by Mr. T, but it was the 80s, so they just called it that. Anyway.
Oh, it didn't go.
Yeah, actually, I tried to go. I was 15, and you know, I drove my friend's motorcycle there illegally. It's Tampa, you know. So anyway, Clearwater. I went over there, and I go to the door. Sorry, 21 and up. 21. Come on, man. He wouldn't let me in. So that was it, you know.
Yeah, I did have that album. I actually bought it at a yard sale on a cassette. And I had a cassette player still in my car at the time. And I put it in a car. I'm thinking, all right, Paul Di'Anno, I can finally hear some Battle Zones and see what it sounds like. And I'm like, I wasn't too crazy about it. I didn't really like it.
I really liked it at the time it came out. I don't think it holds up very well.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
It didn't for me anyway.
If it didn't for you, probably if it didn't for you, then it doesn't hold up at all. You know, so.
I thought it was okay. I had the albums once, and I ended up selling them because I had this little box set with the three CDs in it. So I said, that's good enough. I don't play it that often.
Yeah, I don't really play them anymore. I used to play them quite a bit, at least the first one. The second one disappointed me, and Paul Di'Anno rearranged the lineup. And what made little sense, he got rid of the main songwriter, the only songwriter, and then did the song that, like Tony said, I Don't Want to Know, which was... Again, Paul Di'Anno's trying to get on the radio, I guess, and it's a real commercial. Unfortunately, it's not that good. And back then, if you're on an indie label, radio wouldn't touch you unless it was community radio or college radio.
He was on the indie label called Shattered Records, if I remember.
Shattered Records, yeah. Probably was his own thing, but...
It was a label. They did several other bands that I have in my collection.
Oh, did they? Okay, I thought maybe it would be his own thing, but it didn't. You know, I guess they toured the States close for that album, but it didn't go anywhere. And that album, he tried to have it both ways, where they'd have songs that are a little more commercial and songs that were what I call chunka-chunka songs, you know, that kind of, you know, riffing. Mm-hmm. Overall, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. And what you're competing against in 1985, 86 wasn't just Cinderella and Bon Jovi and Def Leppard, but Metallica, Megadeth, your own band.
Stuff now,
your own old band, Iron Maiden.
Of course, we'd see him move in that direction because he wanted to get heavier.
Let's talk about that. What was that next
in
89, project?
Battle Zones disbanded in 89. Then he started another band called Killers. Used the Iron Maiden second album name. What's the name of that album, Tony?
So he did a couple, actually.
Murder One, right? Yeah.
Murder One is the debut album, and Cliff Evans, who was in Tank, was in the band with him. And the debut album was Murder One, and that one came out on Zoo Entertainment, which is a BMG label. So he actually got pretty good distribution in the U.S. I believe he was living in the U.S. during that period as well. That first album came and kind of went. They released a live in South America called Killers South American Assault. And that one has John Gallagher from Raven had joined the band on bass for that. And it's live in Brazil, and it's pretty much them doing all Iron Maiden songs, except they do a couple of Battlezone songs in the mix. And then they end with a cover of Smoke on the Water.
But John Gallagher himself told me that this album is not live at all. He said it was recorded in the studio with live tracks put over it. They never played South America with that lineup.
Wow.
And then they came back. He comes back with another album called Menace to Society. And that one was early 90s. And he had redone the band. And he comes back and he sounds just like Pantera.
Mm-hmm.
so much that when I got it, I think I got it right. It was probably after Vulgar Display of Power had come out. So we're waiting for our new Pantera record. Mm-hmm. And when Menace to Society from Killers came out, I was playing it for people and said, "Hey, have you heard the new Pantera record?" And I play it for them. And they go, "Wow, this is good." You know, it's good for what it is. I mean, for a Pantera type band, he made a pretty good album.
Yeah.
But it's just like Pantera, and you just can't take it seriously because you know it's Paul Di'Anno,
right?
Trying to be something he's not.
Yeah.
And it wasn't long after that. I think they went out on tour, and he got in some trouble and ended up having to. I think he got arrested and deported. Actually.
No. Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, we were talking in a chat before, and you sent me that one song, and it was totally Pantera. It was a total ripoff of one of the songs on Vulgar Display. It was like insane. Like,
yeah.
By then,
a lot of bands did that at the time. You know, even Jag Panzer, they did the same thing with one of their albums. So many bands wanted to do that Pantera thing. It just, I don't know, boggles my mind.
Yeah, just trying to survive. You know, yeah.
Well, by then I had dropped out of following Paul Di'Anno, and I did get a Salt in South America a couple years ago. I've listened to it once. It's not that great, honestly.
I think it's good for what it is. I mean, for somebody doing Maiden covers, but it's not great. It's not Live After Death.
No, definitely not. I mean, yeah, but it sounds, what makes it, I didn't realize John Gallagher was even on there. That's a little attention I paid to that damn thing. I kept it because of who he is, you know, Paul Di'Anno, but it's not something I throw on. And I didn't even know it wasn't live till you told me, you know, that they just basically just chucked in the studio. I bet they just did like a couple takes. All right, done. And then it went to the pub is my, you know. So,
and since then, he's had several albums come out over the years, rehashed Iron Maiden songs, mm-hmm. recorded live, and he did an album called Night of the Living Dead that was basically a new song with a bunch of old songs repackaged that I think Cleopatra Records put out. So I'm sure they tossed him some money. Say, "Hey, record a new song and we'll repackage some stuff." But yeah, he's doing what he's got to do to make some money because I think he sold his publishing years ago.
Oh, yeah. Paul Di'Anno left. Bruce Dickinson comes in. He's from the band Samson. He did a couple other bands as well, didn't he? I know everybody's always got so many bands. What else did he have?
He had some bands when he was like in college and stuff like that. Nothing ever really of
Samson's the one that everybody kind of knows.
Samson's the one, yeah.
Which was a really freaking weird band. The things that I'm watching some of the videos and the way Bruce dresses and the way he kind of like does. I mean, he's a funny guy in general anyway, but he even acted more goofy in that band. I think that band was just
Bruce, what was up with that?
Yeah, Bruce. Bruce is his real name.
He had a porn stash and page boy haircut. And it was quite weird that, you know, Samson was more of a blues based kind of heavy rock band.
Yeah, they were a throwback, weren't they? Yeah,
and they kind of got caught up in the whole new wave of British metal thing, you know. And they had Thunderstick was their drummer, who was once in Iron Maiden, and he wore a GIMP mask, you know, like a black hood, and played inside of a cage. His drum kit was set up inside of his cage, so it was very theatrical show that they did. Thunderstick kind of got known as kind of the face of new wave of British heavy metal because they had him when that article came out in Sounds. He was the face that was on the cover of the newspaper, Sounds newspaper.
Hmm.
So, you know, that's how Samson got kind of tied into all that. But if it wasn't for that, Iron Maiden probably would have never discovered Bruce, you know, because they saw him play the Reading Fest with Samson and pretty much, had made up their decision. That's who they wanted to be their singer.
I don't actually own it, but later on they released that as a live album. Then they live at Reading 79.
Yeah. And you notice I've got several Samson albums, and actually they're pretty, the two that Bruce sings on are actually Head On and Shock Tactics. They're both pretty good albums. Shock Tactics, especially. Riding with the Angels was their single, which was a Russ Ballard track. Russ Ballard wrote the song, the guy who wrote Since You've Been Gone. And great song. Heretic, the band, Mike Housel band Heretic, actually did a cover of it years later before he was in Metal Church. Great song, really good song.
It's a good song, but I'm not going to pick that song. I'm going to pick a song off the Head On. It's going to be Vice Versa. All right, we'll be right back. All right, that was Samson with Vice Versa. Really weird video if you ever watched that. It's pretty,
it's
a cool song though. I like that song.
Yeah, it's the Muscle Man. Like it's the guy playing Samson, and he's the Muscle Man, gets a hair chopped and loses
his power. Bad. It is so bad. And
Thunderstick is actually the guy, Barry Perkins, who is Thunderstick, actually plays the role of the Muscle Man in the video. Oh, so that was him without the mask.
Don't give me any ideas for any Severed Angel videos. So anyway, Bruce Dickinson comes into the band and they release probably one of the biggest metal albums ever, honestly, you know, Number of the Beast. Everybody always talks about Number of Beasts. Every metalhead listens to Number of the Beast. I mean, you just see so many shirts. Well, you know,
that's when I discovered Iron Maiden. Yeah. I was 12 years old and I saw the album cover at the store, and MTV actually used to play the title track and Run to the Hills back then. And so that's how I got into Iron Maiden. I was so young, I didn't realize that they had any history prior to that till, you know, I started buying magazines. But that was the first Iron Maiden album I ever bought.
Yeah. What about you, Tony?
I think it was the first one that I ever had as well. I think a guy brought it to school and let me borrow it. And I came home and dubbed it, made a dub of it. And that was my first one. And I remember getting Killers not long after that. And the funny way I've got Killers was this guy, we were going to trade some stuff. And I said, do you have Killers? And I meant, did you have Killers Kiss Killers? And he said, yeah, brings Iron Maiden Killers. And I was like, well, no, this isn't what I was saying, but this is cool. Yeah, I'll take this.
I think you won there a little bit better.
Yeah, I came out good there.
Yeah. But again, I mean, the band changed so much with Bruce's voice. His vocals totally different from Paul Di'Anno's, and they just made a really killer album.
For sure.
You know, I love those first two, but this kind of just, it's another step up, you know? It's just really good. And then unfortunately, Clive Burr ends up leaving the band. Now, did he leave on his own or did he get kicked out of the band as well?
I think they were having some issues or something and they just parted amicably pretty much. I think it was just, you know, they just let him go and he, you know, obliged pretty much. So
but
I don't really know a lot of details on that, but you know, he moved on to a few other projects as well.
Yeah, we'll get into that next in a little while. Actually, he is in a project with somebody from another band. Well, we'll get into that later. But the next guy they have come in, Nico McBrain, he's in a band called Pat Travers. I don't really know much about this band. We were talking about it earlier. You guys know a lot about Pat Travers?
Yeah, Pat Travers is an American guitarist, singer. He's just good, you know, hard rock, kind of blues rock. And he was popular in the late 70s, early 80s, a little bit. And Nico's on his second, third album, I believe.
Right. Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's different, way different than Iron Maiden for sure. But that was one of the places that Nico got his start in. And I think he was succeeded in his drum throne by Tommy Aldridge. Actually,
you are correct. Yeah. Yeah,
it's funny. I was listening to this stuff earlier, and it's definitely nothing like Iron Maiden. It's more like AOR type stuff, I think, right?
Oh, yeah. Kind of it's bluesy hard rock. Yeah.
And you can't,
yeah,
I don't.
His famous song was Snorting Whiskey, Drinking Cocaine, which you probably heard that.
I never heard that.
Oh, that's a great song.
But I'm trying to like listen to see if I can hear without like looking and seeing Nico on playing on anything, but I'm trying to see if I can hear his drumming, and I can't. So he completely plays different. With Pat
which
Travers,
song did you made. Pick?
I was listening to both of the albums that I heard. The one that this album's from, this song is from, I picked the song Stevie. So Making, what is it called? Making Music, I think.
Making Magic.
Making Magic. Yeah.
Stevie's a good, and that is a very unique drumming pattern on that song as well. It's really cool. That's a neat song too, because just it's a slow ballad, and the little guitar swells he's doing at the beginning. I have to wonder, did Michael Denner or Hank Sherman hear that when they were writing "Come to the Sabbath"? Because it's got, it always reminds me of. And if you hear the high pitched vocals at the very end of the song and the fade out, that some it sounds like a. Sounds like a woman singing, like a soul singer. It's actually Glenn Hughes doing backing vocals.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that was Glenn Hughes. Okay.
Yeah. The soul singer is definitely Glenn on that one.
I'm not a big Pat Travis fan. I have a greatest hits. I have an older brother. I'm not close to him, but he had, like Tony mentioned, it's hard to believe. It only lasts about 2 years, but Pat Travis is almost an arena act . And for a little while he was huge, and then he got buried by the 1980, heavy metal, hard rock onslaught. And he got buried alive. Like it was an avalanche, he just couldn't compete with that. But he was for a little while, a guitar hero Again, it's hard to believe, because here you are, Wayne, and you know a lot about music, and we mentioned Never Pat Travis, and you're like, who?
Yeah. He was much like Alda Nova. Alda Nova was really big. At first album was like double platinum, and then it just went nowhere. He didn't follow up with, even though he had one of the greatest MTV videos, he just didn't follow into that,
And Pat Travis just, and whatever I may think of his music, good or bad, he just didn't have the charisma. And let's face it, the MTV friendly look
that's what I was getting at. Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
He wasn't Bon Jovi. So.
No. And he wasn't Eddie Van Halen as far as charisma, so.
And Nico was also in another band called Trust, which again, I never heard of that band either. Although I heard that song Antisocial, the one that Anthrax covers.
Anthrax.
And I love that song. But then I heard their version, and I saw Nico does play on a version. It's a French version of that song.
Most of their albums were in French. Yeah.
And now we're up to Power Slave, Somewhere in Time, Seventh Son era of the band. And they're able to hold this lineup for quite a while now for all these three albums, which is really good, because now they're not changing members and they're not changing the sound, and they're pretty much staying very consistent on these three albums, I think. What do you guys feel about Power Slave and Somewhere in Time and Seventh Son?
Phenomenal.
I'm actually missing an album. I'm missing A Piece of Time.
Well, Peace of Mind.
Peace of Mind. I'm sorry. Yes, Peace of Mind.
Peace of Mind's a great album. Great album. I love that. I love Power Slave. When they went into Somewhere in Time, they kind of started going in a little more proggy direction, adding keyboards in. I like that album pretty much, but I don't like it as much as I do Peace of Mind and Power Slave. And the same with Seventh Son. It seemed to go in a little more proggy direction on that one.
Yeah. Somewhere in Time is where I started listening to the band. Some kid I was friends with in school came over, bring that cassette over with him, and we listened to it. I really enjoyed it. I actually drew that cover, by hand.
Yeah.
And because I didn't have a copy of the such an awesome album cover. So many hidden secret things in that picture that lead all the way back to the first album. It's a really cool album cover. But I love those keyboards. I think it really, they didn't use them they weren't flowery keyboards, and it didn't distract you from much. It kind of fit in with the guitars, and they kind of left it, I thought they left it pretty cool sounding in there. So I'm okay with that. My least favorite is probably Peace of Mind. I think maybe half of the album is okay. Then the other half kind of falls apart a little bit. But Power Slave, I think, is awesome all the way through. It. Maybe there's one song on Power Slave I'm not too crazy about. And I think not Back in the Village, but what's after that? God damn it.
Wayne, you froze.
I did freeze and the whole thing shut off.
Yeah, okay. You good now?
What was the last thing I said?
You were saying how cool I am and what a good looking guy I am this year. So happy that I'm on your show. And I'm like, thank you, Wayne. But they're going to think that this is a different kind of show. Anyway,
you were talking about drawing. You were talking about the all the.
Oh, my God. It stopped all that, too. Oh, shit, man.
Power Slave was the first time that I actually saw him in concert. Was the World Slavery Tour.
All right.
And and then I did see Somewhere in Time tour as well.
My grandfather gave me a record of Power Slave, and it was that one with the textured cover on it. It's stupid me. Mm-hmm. I freaking sold it on eBay like years ago because my record player broke.
That's the version that people look for, the texture
all the time, cover. All the time. And they don't make, even with the reissues now, they didn't do that textured cover. If they did, I would have bought it, but I want that textured cover back. That was so stupid of me to get rid of that.
That's sort of why I had it too, and I got rid of it, and I feel like, you know.
Yeah. But that album just brings back so many memories.
You can get one for about $75.
Yeah, I'm okay.
Oh, yeah, fuck that.
I'll wait. It'll turn up somewhere. But I just remember listening to that album and just listening to that song Power Slave and Rhyme of the Ancient Manner that ends off that album. It's just such an epic song. And that middle part with the bass, just sitting there going, you know, going along with the ocean sounds and everything. It's just such a cool fucking song, you know.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Uh-huh.
But they were able to keep that lineup for those five albums. And it just, you know, just shows how good of a band they were at this period in time. And then during like 1988, Clive Burr kind of shows up again and starts a band with Dee Snider called Desperado.
Actually, before that, he was in a version of Praying Mantis.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Because Praying Mantis had connections to Iron Maiden. But they changed their name to Stratus, and they did an album called Throwing Shapes. Mm-hmm. And this is the record that I was looking at that has the endorsed by Puma on it.
Oh, that's dumb.
Clive Burr joined them, and they changed their name to Stratus. And actually, the lead singer on this album was Bernie Shaw, who has fronted Uriah Heep.
Uriah Heep, yeah.
Now, like 30 years or whatever. But then, like you said, he popped up with Dee Snider in Desperado with what was the guitar player was Bernie Torme.
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, that's right. Because that album was supposed to be released and didn't get released for decades, right?
It
was supposed to
be released. It didn't get released until 1996.
The band basically folded for some reason since they couldn't get the album released. And Dee Snider formed a band called Widowmaker and basically re-recorded those songs for the first Widowmaker album. Most of the songs that are on the Desperado album ended up on the Widowmaker album.
I didn't even notice that. I have that album. I don't have the Desperado
album. Am I Evil was one of the songs. And several, Calling For You, several different ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have the Desperado album, but I got to obviously... I don't know. I used to see a bootleg, and the original bootleg I would see had a cover like Dee Snider on the West.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But my cover is a white cover with just them on it, a pretty boring cover. Mm. Yeah.
And apparently Clive Burr did go in the band Trust for a little while as well. I didn't know that. Did he even do any albums with them?
I'm not sure. That's news to me.
I thought that was kind of strange how Nicka was in here and then Clive was in here as well. So that was pretty cool.
Hey, Wayne, I got to meet a girl in like a few minutes. So one more segment for me.
What?
You know, I have a thing for chicks. Anyway, go ahead.
Bros before hoes, bro.
Don't cock block him. Just...
Yeah, man. You're married.
She's up there playing video games right now. I'm down here doing something else. Adrian Smith, he leaves Iron Maiden. And then, what am I getting at here? Oh, and then, Yannick Gears comes in. Now, Yannick was, like I mentioned before, he was in that band with Paul Di'Anno, and, Yannick was also in a band with Bruce Dickinson when Bruce did his first, solo album, Tattooed Millionaire. What else was Yannick in?
He was in Ian Gillan's band, and he was, from Deep Purple, and he was in a band, a new wave of British metal band called White Spirit.
Okay, I never heard of that one.
Yeah, that's a pretty well-known album in the new wave of British metal world. Good album. But he ended up kind of popping back up on the Tattooed Millionaire album with Bruce.
Now, I like Tattooed Millionaire. Do you guys like Tattooed Millionaire? I mean, it's not the whole album. There's some songs that are pretty
shitty. I like the album, but I don't like the cover of Mott the Hoople.
Really?
I like Mott the Hoople. I just don't like that cover.
Exactly. Me neither. I don't like the cover. I like the original song. Yeah. But yeah, Tattooed Millionaire is a great song. I think he wrote that kind of about like Axl Rose, supposedly.
I thought it was about Vince Neil because...
Maybe one
of them. No, I mean, you might be right. Maybe it's a combination, you know. Because he's talking about
all the stars, LA boys, and
yeah. Stuff. Yeah, but ironically, wasn't Bruce Dickinson already a tattooed? Well, does he have tattoos?
I don't think he has tattoos.
Okay, but he was a millionaire, wasn't he, or close to it?
I'm sure he was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I get his point. I like it. And I Gears is on the. I think he only played with Ian Gillan for one album, right? Magic, the last one.
He's on Future Shock, which is probably one of the best ones, actually.
Okay. I knew he was. That's where I heard of him. But I didn't own those albums at the time because in the 80s, those Gillan, fans get upset, were hard to find. Metal Blade reissued them, and I had them on cassette for a while. Now I have them on CD. But Wayne... Because of your aversion to Ian Gillan's voice, you will not like those albums. So avoid them. Everyone else will like those albums except Wayne.
It's funny how the tree connects too, because he was pretty much replacing Bernie Torme in Ian Gillan's band. Bernie Torme ends up playing with Clive Burr in
You're right. It's
just Desperado, you know.
Yeah.
Wow. And then also Dennis Stratton pops back up again. He joins Praying Mantis in 1990.
Yeah, Praying Mantis ended up changing her name back to Praying Mantis, and yeah. they did the album. Was it Predator in Disguise?
Yeah.
And so is he on that album? Dennis Stratton on that album?
He's on in the band from 1990 to 2006, I believe. So he's on.
Wow, that long.
Yeah. He's on a few albums.
Predator in Disguise. Yep.
And now we're up to the No Prayer for the Dying and Fear of the Dark lineups. And Yannick Gers just joined the band. Now, the band kind of changed gears a little bit here. Adrian Smith is gone, and you can definitely tell his influence has left the band. You know, No Prayer for the Dying is, at the time, it was probably my least favorite albums of them. Now it's changed to another one that's a much newer album. But it's just very light. It's not as heavy as the previous albums are, and I don't know. It's just missing something, you know. It's missing Adrian Smith, I guess. What do you guys feel about No Prayer for the Dying?
Hey, I was going to add quickly too that you can edit this in. Dennis Stratton was also in a band called Lionheart.
Oh yes,
which is very melodic rock, very AOR, and that was just before he rejoined joined Praying Mantis. Right. Right, is cool. Yeah. Right. Go ahead, Manny. I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, you're fine. I was just going to say, it's still my least favorite Iron Maiden album, No Prayer for the Dying. I actually like, I don't know, we'll talk about them, but I actually like the Blaze albums better than that one.
Really, I'm shocked.
Well, this is recently. It took me years to get into those albums. We'll talk about that some other time, but I just think so. I think lyrically, it's real easy to point fingers at Gears. I don't think it's totally his fault.
No, not at all.
Yeah,
but always people always point their finger at the new guy.
But Steve Harris runs the band, so anything that happens is because of Steve Harris. So
I just don't think it's a strong album, and I hate to use the word they're going through the motions, but in a lot of ways they were. Is that the one where they recorded the Bruce Dickinson song? That song is stupid. I know a lot of people love Bring Your Daughter to Slaughter.
I like it. It's okay.
It's okay.
It's one of the better songs on the record, if you ask me.
First number one song, by the way.
Where?
And I think it was in the UK.
In the UK, yeah. Okay. They that one, though, No Prayer for the Dying, I don't know. It's just never resonated well with me. I've never been a huge fan of that album. But Fear of the Dark, I thought was a little better of an album.
It was definitely
at the time it came out, I didn't pay that much attention to it. The song Fear of the Dark is a great song. I love the title track.
It's a staple live song now.
It sure is. And that's what sold me. I never really paid any attention to it until I actually saw a bootleg video when Blaze had joined the band. They were playing over in Europe, playing over in Chile or somewhere. And they were doing, I was like, God, this is a good song. And the crowd singing
it. The crowd gets into it, man. And when they get into it,
it makes that song such a good song. But you know, I thought Wasted Love was a cool power ballad.
It's not bad.
But I actually like the stuff didn't do a whole lot for me on those couple of albums for sure.
I like Fear of the Dark better. And I agree with you. It's kind of funny. It wasn't a bootleg that did it. There was an Iron Maiden greatest hits package. I think they used the title a couple times. It came in wasn't a jewel case, you know, one of those little like clamshells. Yeah. Beast from the Eastern, some ridiculous title. And it had a couple new tunes on it. I bought it brand new, and there was a live version of Fear the Dark with Blaze, and that sold me. That sold me. So it came out after it was right before Virtual 10 or 13.
It took you guys that long to really like Fear the Dark, huh? Wow.
It took me a long time. Yeah.
There was so much more going on in metal at that time that I was discovering or bands that I was into. I was big into thrash and stuff at the time. Mm-hmm. That I just didn't pay that much attention to them because they really just lost me with No Prayer.
Wow. See, I was just getting into metal around 90, 91-ish. And then when I saw Be Quick or Be Dead, I was like, holy shit, that just blew my mind. The way Bruce is like screaming in that song and everything and just how aggressive that song is. You know?
That's a cool song. It's just, it didn't do anything for me at the time. It just took me some time to go back and check it out. I mean, that happens a lot of times. You just skip over a record and you'll go back years later, rediscover it. I think Bruce was antsy to do his own thing, and he was feeling like Steve was taking too much control. Yeah. And it was just, you know, that time.
And he and Bruce ends up leaving. And did you guys watch that concert that they did on pay-per-view? Yeah. And they did that stupid magic trick and cut his head off. And
I have it on DVD. Cool, it's terrible. It's terrible.
With I can't remember the magician.
Simon something, right?
Simon, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's terrible. Maybe if you were there, it was cool. But when you watch it on film, it's pretty cringeworthy.
Yeah, it's pretty cheesy. Yeah.
And they actually filmed it's filmed on like video, so it's got that look about it. It looks cheap.
Yeah.
And then they moved on to something, you know, to something else. The casting call went out for a new lead vocalist for Iron Maiden.
Yep, and then they found one in Blaze Bailey, and he was previously from a band called Wolfsbane. You guys ever hear of Wolfsbane? I've never heard of them before.
I had the first Wolfsbane album because Rick Rubin put it out on his
Def Jam.
Death American,
There was so much hype about it, saying these guys are like the new Van Halen.
Right.
Yeah. And I heard that there was a song. I remember, those video magazines, what was it, Hard and Heavy? They had a little piece on them, and you could hear one of the songs on it. And the song had kind of a Van Halen shuffle going on.
Yeah.
And the vocals kind of sounded like David Lee Roth a little bit. So I went out and bought the CD and was highly disappointed in it. Didn't like it at all.
Mm.
I ended up returning it to the store. Didn't like it at all. But that band was around. Wolfsbane was around
for quite a long time.
There's some recordings you can find online of them when they. It's a very new wave of British metal sound that they had to start with, and then they went more rock and roll there for a while. They were going with a more straight ahead rock and roll sound, and then they did the Deaf American album or American.
Yeah, yeah. But
I never heard of them until Blaze joined the band. And it wasn't until about 4 or 5 years ago that I picked an album up. I can't remember what the hell it's called. It's got a black cover on it. It's not bad.
It's not mind blowing.
It sounds like a heavier garage rock, for lack of a better word. And I forgot that I think Rick Rubin produced them, and then he kind of just.
Yeah.
Then he kind of lost interest in them immediately. Like, fuck these guys.
I can't remember the title. It was like, you know, Live, Die Fast or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Now I'm out. So right. Thank you
all right
for having me on. Let me know what we're doing next Wednesday, and if you want, I'll do this again with you Thursday again.
All right, sounds good. We got things
right, man.
To do. All right.
Yeah.
See you later. Bye. Have fun.
See you, man.
So now Blaze Bailey's in the band. They released X Factor and Virtual 11. Now, I was really excited to hear a new Iron Maiden with a new vocalist in it. And I did not expect to hear what X Factor ended up turning out to be. It's so dark. You know, it's completely different from their other albums. It's very progressive. The songs are probably the longest Maiden has done, really, you know, like through every song, you know, on an album. And it was completely different. And I honestly think it's one of my top favorite Iron Maiden albums.
When I first got it, they were on CMC Records over here in the US, and friends that worked at the label's actually based here in North Carolina where I live. And my friend hooked me up with a copy of it, and it wanted to know my opinion on it. And I listened to it and I was like, man, you know, it doesn't really sound like Iron Maiden, but I wasn't expecting Blaze's vocals to sound like that. He actually, compared to what I'd heard him sound like in Wolfsbane, he actually sounds like Messiah Markolan from Candlemass at times. I'm a big fan of that guy. So yeah. I actually liked it. I thought Sign of the Cross was an excellent song. Man on the Edge was another really, really good song. Lord of the Flies, another great one. And so it had some good songs on that album. It's just, I don't think it was accepted over in the U.S. I think in Europe they did fine. They never faltered over there. But here they were back to playing clubs. Ended up going out, and I think they were playing like large halls and clubs.
Yeah.
Not like little dive bars, but you know what I'm saying? 500 or less seaters, basically.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes not even selling those clubs out. You know, I heard a lot of those shows really didn't sell well.
What year was that? 96, 90?
Yeah, probably around 90. No, 96, actually.
95?
Yeah, probably around 90, 95, 96. Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, you got to think grunge was dying out. You had new metal coming in. Just things had completely changed.
Yeah.
And, it didn't do much here. You move on to the next record, and which is Virtual 11, which I didn't like at all.
Really?
I don't know about it. I thought it was just not a good record. I thought it's very weak. Now there's two songs, The Klansman and Future Real,
right,
which are great songs that Bruce made his own. When Bruce came in and he started doing that stuff, he made them his own.
Yeah.
And those are really good songs, and I can go back and listen to those now. But I think really what killed Virtual 11 for me was The Angel and the Gambler, because it's one of the worst Iron Maiden songs I've ever heard. And that Don't You Think I Can Save You? How many times does he say that? It's like Steve Harris just was on a loop. Right. He would write a lyric,
broken record,
keep repeating it over, and it was like a broken record, totally. Yeah.
And they released
that as a single. That was released as a single. Yeah.
And they didn't edit it.
No.
No edits. And I don't, this is where it started, where this was the least amount of songs on Aiden album too, right? Maybe. And there wasn't many songs on this album, because every song was like 10 or 12 minutes long.
Yeah. Maybe like 8-9 songs.
Yeah. Something like that. And I'm looking at the set list, and I'm like, God, there's nothing on here. Like, I hope this is good. And like you, I don't like this album that much, but I do like it more than I like No Prayer for the Dying. There are some really good songs in here, and I actually do like Angel of the Gambler, but it needs to be edited. It doesn't need to keep repeating that shit over and over again.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
But there's also Lightning Strikes. That's a really good song, I think. And there's a couple of the songs on here I like too, but Klansman, they still play that in the set today. You know, it's a great song.
Well, it's like I said, when Bruce came in, when they did the reunion, he came in I was really surprised.
I was too, because I saw the reunion tour where Bruce came back, and then he played the Klansman and the first song off X Factor. You just mentioned it. Sign of Cross.
That was great.
Yeah. So shocked. I was like, oh my God.
And they still bring that up every now and then in the set. Yeah.
So it's cool that they, you know, they play these things, like, because, you know, Judas Priest don't do that, you know, and Anthrax, they don't play like the songs that Joey Belladonna didn't sing and stuff like that. So it was cool to see Bruce would be up for singing Blaze songs, you know, and he's also sang Paul Di'Anno songs. So it's cool that he did Blaze.
Yeah, well, for sure.
So Blaze ends up leaving the band after X Factor. And at some point, Adrian Smith resurfaces and he starts playing with Michael Kiske from Helloween, which I think Michael Kiske was kind of in talks about maybe replacing Bruce Dickinson at one point.
Yeah, he was in running for sure. He and Steve Grimmett from Grim Reaper, right, both yeah. things that were pulled out. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was kind of strange that Adrian Smith got along with Michael Kiske and he was on Michael's Instant Clarity album. So I thought that was pretty cool. And then Bruce Dickinson went on his way to did his couple solo albums, and they kind of Balls to Picasso was okay, and then he did Skunk Works, and I think that one kind of flopped.
Yeah, and that was Bruce's attempt to play to be like modern alternative rock, and it just right. didn't work.
Didn't work at all. And but then he went and did Accident or Birth, and that's when Adrian Smith joined him, and they did that whole album together. And what a great album that turned out to be, you know?
Brilliant album, love it. Love yep. it. That was the best. That was the best Maiden sounding album in years.
Yeah,
when it came out, it was more Maiden than Maiden at the time.
Now that Adrian Smith and Bruce Dickinson got back together, Blaze Bayley is out of Iron Maiden, and now Adrian and Bruce are back into Iron Maiden. Did you ever see that coming?
You know, I kind of felt like it was going to happen because, you know, Bruce and Adrian hooking back up in 97 to do Accident and Birth, they ended up. They did that. Then they did The Chemical Wedding, which is another mm-hmm. great record. And there was, it was so Maiden influence, and they were getting so much hype about, hey, here's these two guys doing from Iron Maiden, doing stuff that sounds more like classic Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
And Maiden were not doing well at all with Blaze in the band. And it was just time. It was time for a reunion, and everybody seemed to be on good terms, and it seemed like nobody was trash talking each other in the press, you know,
right.
ever. I mean, right. when Bruce left the band, when they did that pay-per-view concert that we talked about, I mean, that was the perfect way to have him exit the band. I mean, it seemed like it was, everybody was in good, you know, good on good terms. Yeah. To end things. Yeah. So, you know, the time was right and they came back. And it was a tremendous comeback for them. I mean, they Brave New World was a great comeback album. I think it's probably my favorite of the later Iron stuff for sure.
Definitely.
And there's a lot of those repetitious courses on that one as well.
But they're not as bad as
but not bad, and I can deal with it with Bruce singing those songs. Yeah, yeah, but it's a great record. It's a great tour. I saw the tour in Pennsylvania. I think it was a package with it was Iron Maiden with
I think it was Queensryche opened, right?
It was Halford and Queensryche.
Yeah, Rob Halford. Because then they were going to do that three Tremors thing or whatever, right?
Yep, the three Tremors. Yep, but yeah, that was excellent show. One of the best Maiden shows I ever saw.
Yeah, that was my second Iron Maiden show. I saw the Ed Hunter tour. Mm-hmm. When Bruce came back, I saw that one, and then I saw the Brave New World tour, and
that's they did Ed Hunter first, and then they did the album. That's right. Yep. I forgot about
it. Yep, and that Brave New World tour was just awesome. I actually have VHS of a bootleg of that show from Madison Square Garden, and mm-hmm. it was just awesome. And then they released that the Brave New World like to tour the Brave New Rock and Rio. Yeah,
they did. Yeah, well, they played Rio, and that concert alone is just phenomenal. I mean, what was it, 200,000 people, and just a sea of people, and most of them don't even speak English, but they're singing every word. And they're so loud. And I mean, Kevin Shirley mixed it, of course, and he put the crowd very high in the mix, so you could hear him song to all the choruses and the harmony guitar parts, and
it makes the hair stand up on your arms, man. Exactly. When you hear that stuff, it's just so fucking cool, you know.
Yeah.
And then to hear them, the fans are so into Maiden playing new songs. Usually when a band puts out new albums, they don't want to hear new songs, they want to hear the old classic stuff, but they're playing the new stuff and people are still going crazy because it's that good.
Yeah,
you know. But, you know, they're all back together now. You got a triplet with guitar. You got Adrian, Yannick, and then you have Dave Murray's still playing guitar, so you have all those to get all those guys, and you got Nico still in the band, Steve Harris, and then you got Bruce Beck, and they put out one, two, three, four, five, six albums with the same lineup.
Yeah,
you know, it's amazing.
You know, I'm glad they can. I'm not a Yannick hater. So a lot of people just can't stand him.
I don't get it. I mean, I can understand because he prances around the stage and throws a guitar up, but it's cool.
He's a big part of their stage presence. And because Adrian and Dave do not move that much. They kind of, especially Dave kind of stands back, and he's kind of like Bill Wyman. He kind of stands back in his own little spot, you know? Yeah. But Yannick is and Steve are running around like crazy along with Bruce. Yeah. And, you know, it's another character up there in the stage production, you know, and he's, we joke around, is he really on at times?
Right.
Really, you know, on, but you know, my only negative thing I can say about him was on those early tours was I hated to see when they would do an old song and he would play Adrian's solo when Adrian was standing there. But then over the years now, I've noticed Adrian has reclaimed his solos.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't even notice that. But yeah, I would think so. That would be the best thing to do. But that's cool. You know, it's so awesome just to see these guys together. Yeah,
yeah.
No, me neither. I never did. It's just stupid when people make fun of him because he's in Maiden. You know, they wouldn't have him in the band if he wasn't good. So he's good at what he does.
Yeah. You know?
But in the middle of that, in 2012, for the first time that I know of, Steve Harris started a whole new band called British Lion. He never did any other bands, did he?
No, not that I know of. No, he's done two albums with them now.
Yeah. Yeah, recently, 2012, he did the same title, British Lion. And in 2020, he released The Burning.
Yeah.
And they're pretty good. You know, I really never listened to a whole albums, all the songs or anything, but I heard a couple songs here and there, and it's pretty good. But
I saw them. They were one of the last bands that I saw right before the COVID pandemic.
Okay.
I think I saw them like on a Wednesday, and then like that weekend everything was shut down, you know.
Oh wow.
But it was great. He played in a concert hall, and the place was packed with Maiden fans. Mm-hmm. Probably half of them didn't own the record or care about the record. They're just there to see Steve Harris, and everybody was into it. He came out afterwards, signed autographs, took pictures with everybody. Just really, really cool, down-to-earth guy.
Yeah, I heard that. He's a really nice guy. I know a couple of people that have autographs from Steve because he'll just come out and, you know, give you an autograph or whatever. So that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So did they play Maiden songs on that show?
No, none.
Really?
None at all. Like when I saw Bruce and Adrian back on the Accident of Birth tours and Chemical Wedding period, they were doing Iron Maiden. They always did maybe 2 to 3 Iron Maiden songs in the set.
Right, right.
You know, but Steve did none.
Wow, that's interesting. I wonder why. Now, that's it. I mean, Iron Maiden, they released, 17 albums? That was the 17th album was released in 2021, I believe, right? Senjutsu.
Mm-hmm.
So 17 albums, man. It's insane. Plus all the live albums they've released and all the compilation things. They're just as much as Kiss. How many albums does Kiss have? Are they in like the 20s or something?
Yeah, they're
so they're catching up. Yeah, they're catching up.
It seems like Maiden puts a live album out after
every album. Single album.
Now.
It's gotta be. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just insane that they're still kicking ass and they're just still at it. And we'll see what the next album comes out. I mean, they're a little bit more progressive now and the songs are long, but you know, I like Senjutsu. Did you like that album?
No, not at all.
Not at all, really.
A couple albums. Yeah. I did see them on the tour last year and I enjoyed it. I mean, a lot of times some of the stuff that I don't care much for that they do now, as far as just listening to, if I see it live, I have a different outlook on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool to see them perform it live.
Yeah. Did you watch the, A Matter of Life and Death tour live? Did you see that?
Because
they played the whole entire album.
Yeah. I did. I went and saw that in Pennsylvania when they had some like crummy opening band too, like Bullet for My Valentine or something. But I saw the show. The show was good. I mean, it was cool, you know.
I think I almost fell asleep during that.
I just remembered, you know, when you go to a concert and the drum solo comes up, no offense, you're a drummer, but there's always, everybody always heads to the restroom, you know, so there's always a line at the restroom for like the long solo part or whatever. Whenever you went to, there was always a line at the Maiden show during that whole show, because everybody was constantly, it was just nobody went at the same time. It's just,
they're waiting for the encores.
Yeah. Yeah, they did it. Yeah, they did a couple of classic Maiden songs at the very end.
At the very end. And I was just like, oh, I couldn't wait to. I mean, it was cool to hear some of those songs live, but it's just very slow, slow album. But my least favorite Iron Maiden album.
Didn't care much for that album at all.
No. Yeah. But my least favorite Iron Maiden album, it's not No Prayer for the Good, the Dying. It's The Book of Souls. I just could not get into that album at all.
When I got that album, I was listening to it. I was working where I had about an hour drive to work, and I was driving home one day after work listening to it, and I was dozing off. I was about to run off the road, and I was like, nope, not doing this. This is not.
And it's funny because I hear so many people say how much they love that album. It's just I cannot find a song on there I like.
You know, I've been meaning to go through the later Iron Maiden records and make me a compilation. There are songs that I like on each one of them, and I can make a good compilation out of, you know, maybe 10 songs from those albums, I'm sure, that I would really enjoy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I like most of them, except for Book of Souls. But anyway, Tony, this has been a lot of fun. Thanks for joining me here on freeworld.fm.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. And everybody can, well, whenever our show starts back up again, Almost Human Live, you can check that out on YouTube. And then you can also check out my show, Rat's Hat Review, on YouTube as well. I will see you guys next week at 10 p.m. Eastern on freeworld.fm. Rat's Hat Review Radio. Wayne Noon out. Bye-bye.